Hey, it's Mae Whitman, and I play Frankie in the new Realm podcast, The Sisters. The Sisters is about a museum curator of medical oddities who investigates the origins of a mutated skeleton with two layers of bones. Soon, she uncovers an extraordinary mystery that connects her present with one family's tragic past in hauntingly dangerous ways. Listen to The Sisters wherever you get your podcasts.
What's happening, friends? Welcome to another edition of Unlocked. It's the world's number one Xbox show. We're here at IGN. We are back. It is the depths of summer, but hey, we've got stuff to play. There's some big releases this week. No Man's Sky, 2 years later, finally making its way onto Xbox with some major content updates in that time. We'll touch on that later on in the show. But first, I'll give you the quick rundown of what we are talking about. Xbox Scarlet rumor, a little next-gen Xbox action. We've got a very fascinating rumor to discuss there. Plus, the Xbox division showing some major success, posting $10 billion in revenue for the very, very first time. So a huge momentum, excellent news on the Xbox front. QuakeCon, I'll tell you what you can expect there if you're either going or planning on watching it, as well as some news on the Fallout 76 beta. And 343 addressing whether or not Halo might ever see anytime soon a Battle Royale mode. All right, and let's get rolling here. Ryan McCaffrey joined by Destin Legarry.
Hey,
Brandon Tyrell, the man
Hello.
In black.
All day.
Sing a Johnny Cash song. Go ahead.
Ring of Fire, Boy Named Sue.
Thank you.
Exactly how they go.
Yeah. Brandon Sanchez as well.
Hello. Walk the line.
Thank you. And a quick reminder, by the way, we've been trying to get the messaging going for you guys. Unlocked listeners, you guys, if you want to check out the show early, you can now do that on IGN.com in video form and see these four lovely faces. On Tuesdays at 3 p.m., the show goes live on IGN.com in video form. And then 24 hours later, a.k.a. its usual spot, you can get it all the other ways. So whichever way you want to go, you've got the early option now, should you so choose. All right. Where to begin? How about the fact that it felt like we were at a bar in the first thing in the morning and we're like, it doesn't seem right.
I don't know if you've ever been to Vegas at like 3 in the afternoon, but it like being at a Dave and Buster's at 8 in the morning definitely feels like that.
It was empty and we were there for one reason.
Yeah, one reason, but it was a really good reason. So what we're talking about is, yeah, we were at Dave and Buster's, the current exclusive, the timed exclusive home of Halo Fireteam Raven.
I didn't think about it like
that. Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Although I think it's kind of a de facto exclusive because what other arcade are there? Sad, and I say that not with a bite of sarcasm, but with a tinge of actual sadness.
Isn't like round one? Is it called round one? I forget. There's an arcade. It's around something. And it has
There's a chain around the Bay Area called Gulfland, I think it is.
Well, that's bigger than the Bay Area. That was my old haunt.
Oh, was it
in the Phoenix area? Yeah.
Yeah. That's I know that because that's where all the like fighting game communities would meet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a big big castle with arcade games. We're talking about arcade games because, yes, Fireteam Raven, Halo Fireteam Raven, the new arcade game that now is available at Dave and Buster's. We got a sneak peek last Friday morning. Yeah, as Destin said, we were the only people in there. But they still – they had everything turned on even though it was like 2 hours before open. And, boy, I'll tell you, I walked out of there – wanting to just sit in a quiet padded room.
Oh yeah. Just, why aren't there arcades? They're a little bit of a sound blast to your ears.
Way to start the day. I was so energized, like ready to go.
Tip of the hat to anybody who works in the Dave and Buster's because that is a lot of sensory activity going on all day, every day. But
very loud. Like, even without people there.
Yeah, even with no one there. But Halo Fireteam Raven. The review should be by now up on IGN.com as you see this.
Along with impressions from Miranda and I just sort of like talking about it. And then we got an interview with Kiki Wolfkill, the head of transmedia at 343.
Yes.
And Eugene from Play Mechanics and Raw Thrills, who actually designed it. So we should have more information.
Let's start there on the design because I think all four of us were really impressed with the footprint of this thing.
Yeah, it is massive.
Yeah, I was like,
it's a big cabin.
We walked around. I was like, oh, where is it? Then I saw. I was like, oh,
it's hard to miss. There's an 8 foot tall cardboard cutout of the Master Chief on top of it. But the thing is designed in such that it is like 11 feet wide and it seats four people. But it's got these two Halo rings running over the top of it, like spines, and on the inside. inside you see like the print of Alpha Halo, or the Halo from the first game, and it's just such a cool design.
It's
experience.
Like really spacious too, and like it has really nice lighting as well. Like it's not too bright, of course, but just the way like everything seats, it just is comfortable.
It is,
and it's really neat because it is two screens, but you can shoot across both of them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so having that extra space is really important when you're trying to like steal kills on the other side of the screen. Like I did. Yeah. But you know.
And it needs to be spacious because to crank your gun to hit the other screen, you really have to like do one of these things like this.
Yeah. So it's a very like weighty, heavy mounted gun turret.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there's, you know, you've got just triggers on there and then a second, there's a reload button.
A reload and then grenades on top.
Yeah, the grenade button. But
I really like the variation and level design. Like each sort of have its different palette. I really enjoyed that. And like some have infinite guns. Like if you're on a Warthog, you're just firing that at a ghost and such. Mm-hmm. And I had a lot of fun playing it.
We talk about variety. I mean, it is a fast-forwarded version of Halo 1 that you're not following Master Chief, but you're visiting a lot of the same
locations. You're actually following him.
He shows up.
Yeah, kind of.
Like, you're following his path, but not really. Like, you're playing alongside him as ODST, and you see him every now and then.
Yeah.
Like, the Chief just pops up, and you're like, oh, the Chief. And it's, like, a really cool perspective, too, because it's, like, a point of admiration, right? Because, like, you guys are, like, working your hardest, like, slay all the Covenant and get the Flood, and then the Chief just rolls in and creams everybody. Like, oh, okay.
Just kills nine people in front of you.
For me.
I mean, the story kind of goes like this, where every once in a while you intersect with the Chief, but it's never like you said last week, it's not gratuitous. It's cool. You get those hero moments where he leaps over in slow motion, shotguns a Flood, and kills something with an energy sword, and you're just like, oh, yeah.
But no, I was no Steve Downs, though. No voice, no little line. I mean, we could have paid Steve Downs.
I think that's fair. He didn't need to talk to us.
I want a scene where it stops. He takes up both screens and he's like, I need a weapon. You throw him your weapon.
Yeah.
And then like he takes the boat, kills a bunch of grunts.
Yeah.
Destin Legarry, game designer.
It sounds like you want a G.I. Joe after the credits moment. We're just like, great work, soldier.
So it took us about 45 minutes to play through. I've got the four of you full critique on IGN now. We did all like it though. That's the bottom line.
It's a good game. Like it's a good light gun experience. Mm-hmm.
I think it's fair. Would you guys agree with me that it's a spectacle as much as it is a game? I mean, it is very much about the physical experience and the cabinet and the four, you know, two 65-inch HD TVs next to each other. I think it would lose a lot if there were just an Oculus Rift version of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think so much of my enjoyment with that, of course, when it comes to multiplayer games, is playing with people you know and having a good time trying to beat each other's high scores. Mm-hmm. And just like, it's like good competitive fun, but also just like looking at it for each other and like yelling goofy stuff at each other, like just kind of getting into it, like kind of role playing a little.
Yeah.
Like we did a little bit.
We did.
It was good.
Yeah, there are scoring screens at the end of each of the six missions.
Yeah.
There is a winner crown for the highest score.
That's why it was the kills.
It's actually the highest kill count. It's not even the score.
It was the highest kill count automatically wins just based off more kills give you more score. But there was an instance where you and I tied for kills.
Yeah.
And then it went down to, I think, accuracy or something like that.
Oh, okay.
No, it went down to score then because I always had higher accuracy. But then I checked every time. I only won once, but I noticed that like someone else had a higher score but didn't win. But the other person had more kills.
Yeah. Mm.
So I'm pretty sure it's based on kills.
Yeah, I think I got first place once, but then the rest of it was just the two of you back and forth.
Once. And you got it a few times, and then Sam got it once. We shared it. It was like six chapters.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's like fun getting competitive like that. And like if you can bring some friends and if you have the card and the chips, I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know like the transaction of it. Yeah,
so that's I went down the rabbit hole trying to find out a base price for a Dave and Buster's chip or credit, whatever you want to call it. And it's fluid, right? Like
it's like cryptocurrency. It really is.
I found like a post from 2008 that like has these conspiracy theories. It was like a 12-page like
manifesto.
Wow. Like I could tell this was like printed out on like old paper and like pinned to a corkboard at one point. But it really did have like 12 pages of like the best way to like get the most for your money. There was even a section of like, well, if you spend this many credits to get this many tickets and use them to buy 360 games, technically, if you live in a state that has less than a 4% sales tax, you're better off getting your new games at Dave and Buster's than buying them at GameStop. And I was just,
wow. By the way, what state has less than 4% sales tax?
Well,
I think Hawaii Texas might be the only one.
It was a very old post. I think it was like from 2009. But anyway, so yeah, the value of a chip is fluid depending on how many you buy. If you buy it, if you spend $100, chips are worth more than if you spend a $10 package. I think it works out to be like if you spend $10, they're like 16. They're 16 cents a piece. If you spend like $100, they're 15 cents a piece.
What was your final conclusion on the cost?
It was between $15 and $20 to get through per player
for a full playthrough
to get through the full 45-minute experience.
I think that I know for me, and I think Brandon, you said you were about the same. We were somewhere between like 8 and 10 continues.
Yeah, it was about on average 1 to 2, maybe 1.5 per chapter. I want to say
right. Okay. I do wish there was a better way to like regenerate health. I think that was something that was really missing there, is because you don't have a way to get back. And so like once your health is gone, you're just done.
Yeah.
Probably on purpose.
I mean,
that's
an arcade game, right?
Yeah. I mean, when you think of like House of the Dead or Time Crisis or, you know, that's the way it goes, is like you have to, and it's rigged too. Like you're not supposed to be able to survive through the whole thing. Mm-hmm. There's more damage incoming at you than you can possibly deal with. Right. So
no matter how good you are, there will be something there shooting at you. You won't notice it for just long enough, and it's going to wipe out your health.
I imagine there's some guy out there who could beat it. Like with one continue.
Oh, someone's going to do it.
Yeah.
Oh, for sure.
And I would love to see that happen. But
at the same time, I did it, and I called this out in my review. I thought it was – it felt pretty fair to me, mm-hmm. as far as – like it didn't feel like it's the, all right, we need more money from you now, and just like something destroys you.
They glass the planet.
Like, I thought the duration of each life was reasonable.
Yeah.
One small thing they do, if you don't have four players, like the AI is – actually contributing to the fight, they're shooting enemies and such.
It is a little bit easier too if you don't have four players.
Like
there are fewer enemies coming at you constantly. Like you said, you do have the AI to help you shoot things down. They will also kill things on your screen. So it's not
good. You and I, Miranda, went after we all played through it, you and I went back together and just did two player through the first half of the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we played it 1.5 times.
Yeah, there were sections, I guess, where an elite showed up for each vertical, like one for each player. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering if like you have two players, if there's only two elites show up, but then the AI also assists in killing those things.
So story-wise, you follow four ODSTs.
Yeah.
What was the AI that we were discussing? I can't remember.
Wellesley.
Wellesley,
yeah.
Or Wesley?
Yeah.
No, it's Wellesley, believe me, because I was just scrubbing through footage all day yesterday with his name on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so all the ODST have like actual backstories and ages and
bios
and stuff.
Yeah.
Bios, yeah. But they're not really utilized all that much in the story, which is fine. Like, it's just you write it on the cabinet, and now you get to be this person, and I think that's fun.
There are cutscenes, but they talk about like the mission at hand, not like, oh, when I was a kid back home in Arkansas, you know, like there's no like character building.
There's a 30-minute character backstory.
All the character building is in the bio on the bezel around the TV screen.
Yeah. It's three male ODSTs and one female ODST. That's literally all I remember about it.
Age ranging from 20 to 37, I believe.
Yeah. I don't know if they're going to be part of the canon. I doubt it. But
maybe they are.
They are a fire team. Team
doesn't really matter by the end.
They are
spoilers.
No, let's not talk about it. Oh. They are fire team Raven, and they do the game, as we've already mentioned, takes place during Halo Combat Evolved. So what I really liked about it is less about the characters themselves, but more like, I remember this level. Like the game starts, you're on Pillar of Autumn when the Covenant are attacking it after it jumps out of slip space to Alpha Halo. That's hard to say.
Well done.
Thank you. And so you're fighting through the Pillar of Autumn to make it off the ship, as the Chief is doing that in a different section, which, you know, you remember if you played Halo Combat Evolved.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that happens continuously through the game. Like
There are a couple of, I guess, timeline, maybe call them cheats, where there are a couple of opponents from Halo 2 that weren't in Halo 1 that show up. That's not to say, you know, It's not quite a retcon per se, you know.
I like that you're dancing around it, but we straight up called it out in our impressions video.
Well, you know, I let people experience it.
Okay,
but it's also,
if you want to know, then go watch the other video.
There you go.
At the 4-minute mark, I'm sure.
Thank you. But yeah, we all had a really good time with it. I would say so. Yeah, I mean, it's roughly $60 to play this game for four people. Mm-hmm. So if you bring definitely better with friends, no doubt about that. Try to bring a full crew. But I it's not a thing that I really and I don't say this, I don't mean this negatively, but it's not a thing I want to play again.
Yeah.
But I had a really good time playing it with the three of you. And just having, you know, it was like an amusement park ride.
Yeah.
Although I guess amusement park rides, they do want to go on again and again.
I'm not going to drive to Daly City, but if I'm in a Dave and Buster's and I see Halo,
if I
Halo
find
there,
myself in a Dave and Buster's,
well, you know, sometimes during PAX or something, you're doing a community meetup, you end up at a Dave and Buster's. I'll play it again.
Yeah, it never happened to me.
You never know.
Yeah.
You know what'll happen in the future.
Let's say a police trainer. That's my favorite shooter.
Police trainer?
I really like police trainer.
That's a deep cut.
Yeah. Dude, I remember that now.
Yeah.
It's like crisis.
You're a SWAT guy, and like the blonde lady goes, help! And you're like, don't shoot her.
Oh, yeah, you don't shoot the humans. It's just like a bunch of like polygonal like things. It's pretty old, but it's like
polygonal.
Polygonal.
Did you guys see the Tomb Raider?
No, but you played it
and
with
there
Sam,
was a
right?
Luigi's one.
Yeah, so they had the Luigi's Mansion vacuum thing, which is awesome.
Which has an actual vacuum attachment.
Yeah.
We're just going to talk about Dave and Buster.
Yeah, just like real fast. But the Tomb Raider one, it has space for four players, but me and Sam, Sam Claiborne, who also works here, of course, I guess he's on Gamescom, is where you know him from.
Yes.
There's a rope, and you have to swing it. Actually,
there's all these pistols, and me and Sam were like, but what if we tap into both and play two? We're like, we're going to old school Tomb Raider, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's typical.
But the thing is, to reload your weapon, you don't shoot off screen or anything. You have to like cock the gun. And so what I would do is just, like run it along my pants and just like cock it that way and just go back
that
up.
Is, you
go,
that is baller so right there.
You go like Lara.
That bruises along your thighs.
Yeah.
I think you just life hacked the game into being a better game.
Yeah, so that's the way if you play that game, play like that.
So play two player, but one player.
Yeah, it's really hard. But
play two
it's
player
better
by yourself.
That way. Yeah, that one was interesting too, just because it had like collectibles in it, and I was just like, "How dare you?"
Yeah, you're like the wiki in you, the wiki editor in you, is just like, "No,
oh no, Sam, we have to find every collectible. We can't stop playing until we do."
Oh yeah, it was a good time. So check out the review on IGN as well as the conversation piece.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we were handed a giant pile of.
Cards.
Of Dave and Buster's cards when we walked in to make sure that we got through the game.
Well, they handed us the manager's card, which is essentially the golden ticket.
But it was like at the end, man, there was a, you know, of course we do the right thing, but like I had to you know, force my arm to give them back.
There was a moment where you're like,
no, I don't want to give it back.
They're like, Ryan, you got to let it go.
Yeah, we had to get back for a meeting, and I was just like, but what, can we just stay like another hour? We just got to play through this again. You know, there's a review in progress. We've got to, you know, just stay a little bit longer.
All right.
What did you end up keeping those tickets? Sam and I played a game called Bounce, whatever it was called. And it's just like a bunch of these little platforms, and you have ping pong balls, and you throw them, and they bounce around on these platforms, and they change color. And at the end, Sam and I were just like tossing them in the air like they were coins in a fountain. And we got these two rows of tickets, and we were like, we're gonna get Miranda a stuffed Pikachu before we leave here today. But the desk was closed, so because it was 9 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, you guys were like Tom Hanks in Big. You're just like an adult child, adult children.
We were
running amok.
We were running through the halls with sparklers, just woo. But shout out to the guys at Daly City Dave and Buster's, in particular the GM there, Charlie Cook. He set us up, and they even got us bagels, and it was a very nice.
Thanks, Charlie.
It was a really cool experience.
And Microsoft helped facilitate that as well. And again, in the spirit of reviewing this video game,
I'm so glad we got to cover that. Like honestly, those kind of other gaming experiences are just my favorite things. Like they had the Mass Effect ride at Great America years ago. Like that was so fun. And just like seeing the things you love in a very different shortened way is just so novel. And so I'm glad we got to do that.
It's cool to see it translated. Cool.
Yeah. And I hope a lot of other people get to see it and enjoy it too.
All right. Destin.
Yeah.
It's time for the Destin segment.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Last week.
Oh God.
We had a discussion about Call of Duty.
Yeah.
You were wondering aloud in a serious manner, what is it about Call of Duty that seems to rub some people the wrong way? Mm-hmm. And why do some people seem to really harbor a significant dislike for Call of Duty? And you put out the call for thoughtful discussion on that topic.
Yeah.
What has the community responded with?
Well, first of all, thank you to everybody who wrote in and thought about this and actually had some honest responses. I mean, I have my reasons why I believe that people don't like Call of Duty, and I wanted to hear what you guys said. I wanted to give you guys a voice, and that's what this was about. It wasn't about my opinion. It was about yours. So we got some write-ins from a few people, and I'll just read them right now. David Poland, he feels that the series has gotten sort of stale and formulaic. They've kind of stayed on their path. Time to react, formula shooter. When Call of Duty was in its heyday, it was giving us numerous thoroughly enjoyable experience of both multiplayer and campaigns for its time. Were wholly groundbreaking. Today, not so much.
I mean, I don't necessarily disagree with that in the sense that, you know, we've been doing the just deathmatch zombies. And yeah, the campaign, even I enjoyed World War II campaign last year, but it is very much a shooting
gallery.
They feel
gallery. Samey, right?
Yeah.
That's not the highlight of what that game was, especially for last year. I saw a lot of comments, or there was one in particular, I didn't write it down, but someone made a good point, was that Call of Duty used to be kind of the trendsetter, and now it's just kind of following them and just hitting the same beats over and over.
Yeah, I think with the futuristic aspect, they tried something, but the community didn't really respond well, so they've kind of retreated back to this sort of samey feel and as their safety net. But as David pointed out, he's like, it just feels like you're doing the same thing every year. You're not pushing anything forward. And they kind of developed what most shooters feel like today, on console at least. And I would like to see challenge them to, you know, continue to push things forward. Iron Wolf wrote about his memories playing with friends. He said, personally, I don't think I ever liked it a lot, but I love the experiences I have with my buddies. We're older and actually engineers now, so we don't get as much time to play with the entire crony. These are shortened, but he talked about like playing in college with friends, and I can relate to that a lot, like playing with my friends who just – that's the game that they play, and I'm like, sure, I'll hop on and play a match, kind of the way you would at a Dave & Buster's. Yeah. Did you guys play Call of Duty with any friends? Do you have any memories like that?
Yes.
Yeah, what do you got, Maria?
The entirety of high school. Like, I had a crew of people, and we just played every iteration. I tried to join them at Modern Warfare 2. Mm-hmm. Before that, I was just playing Halo always. Yeah. And then I was like, oh, I guess I'll try Call of Duty. And then I loved it. And then I just played all throughout high school and a little bit through college. And yeah, I mean, that's the thing, right? Like, playing with your friends makes it such a better experience just because they're the people you like and enjoy being around. And it's a different way to hang out, right?
Yeah, totally. So, we also had David Pope, brand fatigue. He's just kind of gotten tired of COD. You know, it's Call of Duty. You know it's there. It's sort of a safety net. It felt one-dimensional after a while, and the futuristic additions didn't change that for me. He's actually really latched on to Rainbow Six Siege. Mm-hmm. He feels like that is pushing forward the shooter genre.
Can't argue with that.
And doing something that Call of Duty hasn't been doing, like introducing these new aspects, especially with the destructibility.
Absolutely.
And everything and the different operators.
Well, they evolved that as a platform.
Yeah.
Because Call of Duty is getting you know, they're
excuse me,
doing the $60 thing every year, whereas Rainbow Six is not that they don't have paid content, but they just keep building off of the core they have.
And they've done a fantastic job. What were you going to say, Brandon?
Oh, I was just going to say I agree. I don't think Call of Duty is necessarily trying to be a leader in the space anymore. I think Activision being the business that they are, EA being the business that they are, you know what you're getting when you buy Madden every year.
Right.
You know what you're getting when you buy Call of Duty every year. And I'm sure that they have a mountain of reports and statistics and graphs and probably a pie chart or two that says that Call of Duty sells because of these 12 factors.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so they develop for these 12 factors. And as long as people keep buying it year over year, nothing needs to change because it makes the company money.
And that's another anecdote I kept seeing, is just people saying that they don't like Call of Duty because of Activision's like business practices of how they market Call of Duty and how they keep reproducing every year the same kind of way.
But people
like,
keep
I guess, expected
it,
way.
So actually the next one I want to talk about was Felipe Mondaca. He said he feels that Activision is fairly anti-consumer, especially with –
that's a comment I saw.
Yeah, yeah. Especially with what they've been doing with Destiny lately, and sort of like, oh, you have to get the DLCs even though you don't particularly support that. So it's more about Activision than necessarily like that. And he said companies like Activision and EA are going above and beyond to be gross about it. I think EA has been a lot better. Like, they learned their lesson after Star Wars.
They're trying to be at least, yeah.
But he's just saying, like, you know, I don't support this thing. And the final one was from Mr. Infinity, again reiterating that there was no innovation with the brand. And he thinks that people are starting to realize that it's sort of just the same thing every year. And last point for me, just thank you to everybody who wrote in, who actually thought about your responses. I'm really glad that some people understood what I was going for with that segment. I just want to have a dialogue with the community.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see, you know, how this year's game is received in the general gaming community at large. You know, Black Ops has been the most popular franchise within the franchise.
Yeah.
But at the same time, there is no campaign, which, you know, made me sad. But it's like, are they going to miss a beat? Maybe not.
I mean, there's people like me who, like, I'll play the campaign mostly because of work, but not necessarily that's not what I go to Call of Duty for.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But there are a lot of people who do that. So it's going to be really interesting to see how this does compare to every other Call of Duty in the past.
And the big new thing that Activision and Treyarch are pushing this year is, of course, Blackout Mode.
Which they've shown nothing of.
Well, not yet. It's we got some time. You know, don't want to hold it against them quite yet. But yeah, will that be seen as innovation? Will that be seen as...
I didn't mean that as negative. I want to see it.
Yeah, no.
Like, I want to know what's going on with that mode.
So, yeah, I'm curious to see what Black Ops 4 does or doesn't do in the minds of the general community at large.
Yeah, and I think, you know, with as much fatigue as that franchise has, seemingly in the community, there are a lot of really other great shooters out there. If you want a campaign, you have the Wolfenstein.
Yeah, or like with innovative shooting mechanics, like if you look at Titanfall and just like how that movement works, the Titans work just
super
all of
hot.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah, super hot.
I didn't talk about this, but in addition to these critiques, there were a lot of people who are like, I like Call of Duty. Yeah. I think people are just hating on it because it's the big dog in the room.
That happens
and
as well.
That was kind of my guess. There were a lot of positive, supportive comments for the Call of Duty brand, so I don't want it to seem all critical.
Sure.
But I guess the topic at hand is focusing on those criticisms. There was also a lot of criticisms about balance, of course, which is a big, tough challenge for any big multiplayer game.
Well, it's tough because you can't please everybody, you know?
Especially if
the quick scopers want quick scoping and the running gunners want running gunning, and some people want one shot, one kill, a slower, methodical thing, which, you know, in my opinion, you have Battlefield 4. If you want a Twitch shooter, you have Titanfall. If you want a slow tactical shooter, you have Halo, you know?
And that you can't blame Activision on. That's just, that's just
the market.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on with the core Xbox news of the week. I want to start with Scarlet, the code named for the next generation Xbox and sort of family of Xboxes. You remember Phil Spencer didn't say, you know, one box, said the future consoles, future family of consoles. Longtime Microsoft tipster Paul Thurrott reports that Microsoft is currently planning two different pieces of hardware, one of which will be a traditional console, similar to the Xbox we know now. The specs are still unknown, blah, blah, blah. But more info comes from the second device, which is said to be a streaming box that is designed for Microsoft's upcoming game streaming platform with the rumored name Scarlet Cloud.
Interesting. Like on live. Remember on live back in the day?
Sure.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
not many do, but I do.
Or PlayStation Now.
Yep.
Yep.
I do.
I think PlayStation bought on live.
Correct.
It's now PlayStation Now.
You are correct. Yeah. Yeah. That is a good memory. But yeah, I mean, how do we feel about that? This would certainly be a cheaper machine if it's just handling streaming and it's not doing all of the processing locally.
Mm-hmm. It'll be better. Please be better than PlayStation Now. It's very not great right now.
Right now?
Hopefully Xbox does it better. And I think they will. It seems like they're investing time in how they're going to develop this particular product, the streaming product anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, I wonder what's the ultimate difference if it is correct and there are two devices? I suppose the
optical drive
Scarlet Cloud. Well, I'm wondering if Scarlet Cloud, you wouldn't be able to own anything. If it would just be here's your subscription.
Oh, that's the
and
thing.
And you don't
right?
own anything, much
and,
like Netflix.
And this,
right?
this is a great
pass.
It's a great segue into our next story, but it's too early to go there. But you can tell they're already building the infrastructure for this.
I feel like that would be so difficult, though, because there's probably games that wouldn't want to be included into like some subscription service. That would be hard for them to like pull in everything for that console, right?
It would probably just be like a Game Pass model, right? Subscribe to Game Pass, and then you're able to purchase the games if you want to keep them. And I get notified all the time by Game Pass, like, don't forget State of Decay. I'm like, oh man, I got to play that.
Yeah. Right. But it's still a limited library. Like, granted, it is like a lot of huge Xbox titles, but that's not everything. So.
Well, that's where I was going with it. I think between Xbox Live and your $10 a month Game Pass subscription, they're clearly building out Game Pass to be a much larger library than it is right now. And in 2020, if this streaming box does come out, you know, between Xbox Live and Game Pass, you could theoretically have enough games on your Xbox to play. assuming that, you know, if you're not getting what you not want, you can also dive into EA subscription model or, you know, and maybe there's going to be some sort of rent feature on the store. I don't know. But it's clear that they're setting up with all of the services and cloud-based stuff. They're setting up an infrastructure so that you can just subscribe to everything you need and you never have to go to the store and buy a game again.
Yeah. And they have some big games in there, like the Fallout games. I think they have 3 and 4.
4 got added recently. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they added The Division. Like that you could easily just play for a month. Like,
and of course,
if you're going to play nonstop.
Every first party game.
Right. Yeah.
Every first party game.
All the first parties.
And the great thing about Game Pass is it works so well for what we're moving into trend-wise, which is games as services.
Right.
They added Vermintide 2 on there, which is a game that I was wholly unimpressed by on PC because I didn't spend enough time with it, but it hit Game Pass and I've been playing it a lot, mm-hmm. a lot with my friends. And it is one of those games where you can continue to play it with your friends for a long time, you know?
I know I'm the resident old at the table, so
Papa McCaffrey.
Maybe this may be my brain failing me, but am I nuts or was this almost exact rumor about a second Xbox device that would just do streaming stuff. Wasn't that rumored for Xbox
like
One?
Like,
I thought so too.
Like, wasn't that a thing from a while ago? And that's not to say I'm not trying to trivialize or discount Therat's rumor on this. I'm just saying I feel like I've heard this before with previous Xbox hardware. Like, I wonder if this is just a thing that Microsoft has been kicking around for a while, just waiting for the right time and the right hardware to strike and the right infrastructure.
Environment, too.
Yeah.
Like just having that idea that streaming is an acceptable thing to do. Like it's so integrated into our society now. It's just like that's how we consume a lot of media now. And so maybe that's kind of like where they're trying to position to strike. It's like, oh, well, this is obviously doing well. Games Pass is doing super well. So maybe this could work.
It's just funny to see the parallels between this rumored next one and what the Xbox One was originally going to be.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So it seems like I don't want to say they jumped the gun, but maybe the audience wasn't ready for it.
They did. No, I think that's totally fair. I mean, I think we said it at the time. I mean, it's just Steam, the PC world had figured that out.
Yeah.
You know, it took time. Steam didn't. Steam was not the de facto
first couple of years. It was
thing overnight. Yeah. It took, I mean, it took time and it took Half-Life 2, one of the seminal games of our lifetimes, to help really kickstart that and drive it.
And then Team Fortress.
Half-Life 3 on Xbox One. Is that what you're saying, Ryan?
No!
Tell us what it was like.
But yeah, like, so, it, you know, the it was already an accepted standard in the PC world, but, you know, the time and the manner in which Microsoft tried to do that clearly was not the right way to go, and they figured that out.
It just made me think of this, but PC gaming now is largely only digital. Like, what do you do?
Oh, it's like 99%.
Yeah, it's so, like, who actually owns discs? I mean, surely people do, but, like, do you actually go out and seek a disc for your PC now? Like, that seems strange.
Many PCs don't even have optical drive.
Right. Yeah, it's optional.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, understanding that, like, when Steam hit and figured it out and the market moved digital, the brick and mortar, the physical version of it kind of went away. Like, are we looking at that for consoles at some point?
Eventually.
No disc in the Scarlet?
Not
for the Scarlet.
No optical drive for the Scarlet, which will keep the price down and size.
Is that people use their systems, at least I do, like to watch movies. Like, I still buy Blu-rays and stuff. And so it's like I kind of need that optical drive still.
Yeah.
So I'm still dependent on it because I don't want to I stream some movies, but I do like having some to
And 4K streaming is only just starting to really pick up.
Yeah.
And that needs
a lot of bandwidth.
That's a big question I have too, is like the bandwidth of like what this would require. Is like how intense will it be? Like, is it going to be a really strenuous thing for the internet plan that I have now? Would I have to upgrade to like keep up with the bigger
games?
Well, thank
God we have net neutrality. Oh.
That's a topic for a different podcast with a lot of that. We need a lot of alcohol and tears for that.
Oh, don't worry, we're way ahead.
What do you think? Isn't this
it's coffee? Or is it?
It's coffee.
That's the thing. If you live on the coasts, this box seems largely for those people or big, you know, population hubs,
metropolitan
areas.
Yeah.
I know, this is all forming as we're having this conversation, but it seems totally feasible that, like Miranda said, if you use your box as an entertainment box as well, which is something that Microsoft is very clearly interested in keeping as part of their, you know, one of the weapons in their arsenal, you know, the Xbox is the all-in-one entertainment box. It says so in every press release. That is still the more expensive, larger version for you. And if you want the this isn't a slide on it, but the Roku version of the Xbox, right, that is just streaming only, like the, if you're not using it for entertainment outside of streaming, that seems like the cheaper version for you as well. So I could see two different products, two different price points serving two different groups of people.
On that, on that note, with the X's Blu-ray thing, please keep updating that software. It's still pretty clunky. Like, it works, but I would love to see like it it just fleshed out a little bit more.
Well, on that exact note, a complete random aside occurred to me while you were talking, and it's just that it's funny that all the big format war that happened in the 360 PS3 generation,
HD DVD versus Blu-ray.
Oh yeah,
you know, Sony put all their chips in the Blu-ray corner, and they paid a price for that for a time with the higher price of the PS3, but in time, of course,
they got it. They won.
Blu-ray won, but it's a little humorous, I feel, that eventually the best Blu-ray player ended up being an Xbox One S.
Right?
Yeah, for 4K Blu-ray player. Yeah. It's like the best, cheapest 4K Blu-ray player you can get.
How do you miss like that? I just don't understand. Like, how did Sony
miss on the
that?
Pro?
Yeah.
Well, it was a cost move. They did the opposite thing of what they did with the PS3.
Yeah.
They went, oh man, we cannot make this a super expensive box.
Right.
We got to get our, you know, we want to get 4K out there to our audience. Sir, or ma'am, we should put a 4K Blu-ray player in it. How much will that cost? Oh, another $100? No.
Yeah.
Can't do it.
Jenkins, get out. I mean, yeah, man, the best consoles have to be expensive, right? The Xbox 360 lost money for years, but it was the better system.
A few years. Wasn't like the original.
Sorry, I added one too many E's in that. Years.
Okay. Yeah, it's fine.
And it seems, I don't know if they're turning a profit on the One X yet, but it is clearly a very expensive console to make. And I'd be curious to see next generation, you know, if that sort of like cost in the product is representative of what we actually see.
Yeah, it's like, I want to know what the top of the line Xbox is going to be next generation. Mm-hmm.
Well, let's talk about that for a minute. What do we? I mean, we're just talking Scarlett before we move on. What do you guys want out of Scarlett as a? I mean, I know there's some obvious things,
the streaming thing.
Well, no, just either one, either the streaming Scarlett or the local Scarlett. Let's call it the Xbox One X. You know, home console, traditional console style. What do you want to see out of it?
That's tough for me. The X is a phenomenal console. I really, really am happy with my X. I love all of its capabilities. I think some back-end stuff with being able to set the outputs, like the video outputs, but they're probably going to update that on the X anyway. Software-wise, like the UI is looking pretty good from where it started.
You have a 4K TV, right?
I have a 4K TV.
Joe's back of the Joe's truck.com.
Don't go to that website.
A
friend of mine, PowerGPU, actually helped me out. He helps a lot of streamers and such like build their computers, and he actually knew of a store that had the exact model. And I have a KS8000 for people that know Samsung brands. Yeah. It's a very coveted television that a lot of people want to get because Samsung's begin pushing the QLEDs. QLED.
Yeah.
And
low input lag on that, right?
Low input lag is one of the best gaming TVs. I was very, very happy with my purchase. I love my television.
What size is it?
I don't remember, but it's large.
He's being modest.
Yeah.
Well,
it's so big, Brandon.
Oh, my.
You wouldn't believe.
Anyway.
Yeah. My TV.
I'm literally speechless. I don't know what to say to you right now.
It's kind of hard to imagine what I'd want from the next Xbox, and that's a problem I always have myself. Excuse
maybe
me.
What do we expect?
Every generation, right? It's like obviously better graphical fidelity and like faster processing, like just generally a smoother experience. But I don't know what I'd want feature wise because I feel like we're already such a great place for consoles, and they just keep coming up with new things. I'm like, oh, I didn't even think of that, and that's a great addition.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's where I'm hanging fruit, like exclusives, of course.
Well, that's not the hardware, right?
Yeah, I mean, for me, I think
hardware wise, it's pretty great.
I want to see, you know, the with the 360. Just raise the bar up to everything's HD, 720p.
Yep. Standard.
So what I would presume I don't want to say assume because we know what 8K. Assuming does, but no, I expect 4K will be the standard, the minimum standard on Scarlett. And I just hope that we can start. I hope it's powerful enough where we can start to see some 4K 60 frames per second.
You say 4K standard, meaning that it's not going to support 1080?
Well, put this way, every game that's advantage of
right.
it.
Okay,
yeah.
exactly.
I'm talking on the software. Okay. So
the current Xbox does 4K 60. So
Forza,
144.
But Earth? Forza and there are only a few games that that actually do 4K 60. I'm saying I want to see it across the board.
I get it.
The same way that we saw 720p across the board on the 360.
What you're referencing is how they standardized all our games are going to run at 60.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's what you want to see.
That is because you know no one 8K is still a pipe dream.
It's yeah.
So
don't
and it will be.
I love my TV. Don't.
I mean, 4K TVs still haven't even achieved like massive market penetration.
They're like less than 50% saturation.
I don't
maybe
have
less
one
than 25%.
Yeah,
because of video capture reasons, I play at 1080 very often.
Right,
it's still.
So yeah, I think 4K 60 is a great standard to aim for with Scarlett. Like that to me, combined with you know obviously the more RAM and the more this and the more that and higher, better image quality, maybe you know, whether it's anisotropic filtering or anti-aliasing or what have you.
Don't screw with the controller. It's great.
Big words.
Yeah,
that's the controller.
That's what I want to see.
I love the controller. I think you're right, 100% right. I think the One X needs to be the baseline, and I think you have to support native 4K with every game moving forward, outside maybe the ID Xbox brand games. But having said that, if you make that hard drive smaller than 2 terabytes, I will find you.
Yeah, you're right. It's got, I mean, 4 would be good.
I bought that external you recommended for the OG, and I still haven't filled it up.
I'm the same way.
So many games. Yeah. I just don't want to deal with it.
I have the Microsoft branded 2 terabyte external hard drive. I've used it's 40% filled right now, I think. But if Forza 7 is clocking in at what 107 gigs now?
4K assets, man.
Yeah, and everything is 4K standard moving forward. Like that, those hard drives need to be bigger.
Yeah, I think that's okay. Just an easy thing to check off the list. Like, I'm sure that's already in the process of, like, we know we need to do this thing going forward.
Yeah.
I think there's just a lot of standards that, like, we've talked about that they already know they need to do for the next generation. I'm just mostly curious, like, what major innovations will they bring with this new generation?
I want to circle back to what Destin said a minute ago, though. Don't mess with the controller.
Right? Leave it alone. It's great.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how you make it better, but I didn't know how they would make
the Elite version 2.
The 360 or the 3. I didn't know how the 360 controller could get much better.
Yeah, the D-pad.
That was the obvious one. And they did.
And they didn't change it very much.
Well, it's a lot better.
It is.
Even the non-Elite, just the standard Xbox One D-pad is a lot better than the 360 one certainly was.
Do you guys want them to be recharging controllers? Instead of having battery packs?
I'm actually pretty okay with AA's because they last a good long time.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it'd be nice, but I'm not hung up on it.
I want the option.
My experience is like between rechargeable batteries or rechargeable battery packs, rechargeable batteries are always a better value. For me personally, just because you can go on Amazon and find a deal, whether it's Black Friday or
Friday. Last that long, though, right?
I don't know. Well,
but if you have a few constantly cycling out, you're constantly recharging those batteries, it doesn't really matter that much.
And I've constantly run into issues with those little battery packs where eventually the sync stops for whatever reason. Yeah. And I've even cleaned the receivers and all that on it, but eventually they just give out, right?
I prefer to have batteries that I can kind of control. It's like I don't want to have to plug in. Like I don't want to deal with that while I'm playing. I have that constantly with my PS4. I think I just need to get a new controller, but it just doesn't hold its charge anymore.
Yeah.
It's just like, well, okay. Plus,
if my TV remote dies, I can pull the batteries out and use it there while the rest are charging.
That's true.
I'm actually okay with internal batteries. Like I don't need the control of dealing with AA's or whatever. It would be kind of cool if they had that feature where if you just set it like on a pad or near the console.
Oh, yeah.
Recharge.
Oh, what is that called?
Oh, Qi charging? Like a wireless charging?
Yeah, that would be kind of nice as an option. But, of course, you still need to be able to plug it in.
That now you're, keep it hardline. You're talking, you want to talk about like the whatever the – if there's a – if the Scarlett is the top end like $500 console, I like that idea, having the top – I'm sure it'll probably be a vertical or horizontal orientation. Mm. Having the top of it in horizontal form be a Qi.
Yeah.
Well, that would be
really
cool.
Neat.
I would like
that. That would be super cool. So you can just set the controller on it when you're not
always
using it.
Always charged.
What about this? We've moved away from a Kinect-based console.
Yeah.
Yes. And with that, we lose a lot of functionality. But now with Siri and Alexa, I hope nobody has it. I'm so terrified of saying both those names because appliances go off.
With the digital assistants.
Thank you. With those things, you know, in the household becoming more and more prevalent, you know, I never thought I would own one, but I have four Alexas in my house now. Does Scarlett have...
Don't let them outnumber you guys, friend. You're insane. It's only you and your girlfriend and a puppy. Yeah, they outnumber you.
The puppy's fine. She's very energetic.
She'll take them on.
Yeah, seriously.
You got to bring her in. It's when she's ready. Yes, I know she's brand new, but...
We're super tangenting right now, but yeah, she still needs her vaccinations.
Penny.
Aww.
Penny, the 10-week-old
dog's adorable.
Super puppy. Thank you. Yeah. She's a handful. I went to bed at 1. I got up at 6:30 because she had to pee.
Puppy.
Anyway, digital assistants.
Does the Scarlett console have some sort of microphone in it or you know, utilizing Cortana as some sort of, you know, digital assistant for your Xbox, because the Xbox voice commands right now are still like not great, and you need, you know, some sort of hardware or third party hardware.
Maybe
keep NASA out of it this time.
Maybe in the controller. Like, it'd be make a lot of sense. Like, if you use a controller, or if you could like hold down, you know, like the Xbox button, just say, "Hey, Cortana."
What if every controller has a mic?
Digital assistant.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah, that kind of thing.
Well, but then every controller has to stay on in some sort of low power mode, which gets back to the battery situation.
Yeah,
but yeah, putting it. But there's I think you guys already hit it. There's no reason why it couldn't be in the console itself.
Right.
That's always listening because it's always plugged in.
Mm-hmm. What if you say,
always on.
Whatever, Cortana, turn on my Scarlett, and she just turns on immediately the last controller that was paired to it or something like that.
That'd be a nice thing. Because, yeah, I will say
ease of
moving.
Use.
Yeah, yeah, moving.
Talking about
ease of use. This is all software stuff.
Billion-dollar ideas here.
Yeah.
No, we're talking about a
microphone.
It's hard to speculate what could happen next, and these are just some thrown
I do here. Miss from using the original Xbox One, I do miss the voice commands for media specifically, like,
because
I would be watching
so much still.
Netflix or something, and it'd just be like, you know, they changed it to, hey, I don't want to say it because in case everybody has stuff plugged in, but it used to just be you know, Xbox pause, and you know, just get up and let the dog out and then come back, Xbox play. They changed it, the command prompt for that, but I would love to have that back. That's like, it was just a nice little convenience.
I still have my Kinect plugged in, so I use that constantly.
Oh, nice.
It's my favorite.
So we want 4K60 standard.
Yes.
A big hard drive, a digital assistant. Don't touch the controller.
Although I do,
every console comes with a life-size figurine of Master Chief.
Wow.
We got it. We did
it. What?
I do like that idea of having the digital assistant turning on the console and the controller.
Yeah,
that's a good idea.
What I love, like, I don't know if it's a day one edition. I honestly haven't looked into it too much, but I've set my controller to, when I turn this on, it automatically logs me in.
I do that
this
too.
This is my set controller.
Yeah.
And it super bums me out because the Y button is starting to stick a little bit. I don't know if something got in there and it's breaking my heart because now I'm using different controllers. but I really, really think, like, just like Destin said, chiming back to what, you know, what he said very eloquently, which is just ease of use. Like, just make everything work in your infrastructure. Microsoft's got an amazing walled garden that they can do whatever they want in there. And I think consumer first is the way to go with that.
And Sony better step up with the one thing that just annoys the heck out of me whenever I use my PS4. This little feature in Xbox that they've had from day one of the Xbox One that I adore is turning the TV on and off when you turn the console on.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't have to do that. It's like the most first world ridiculous little thing ever, but I hate having to do that on PS4 now because Xbox has spoiled me.
Oh, here's one. Give me the ability to search for a setting. I hate going through Xboxes.
Digging through the menus?
I memorize them now, but I hate going through looking for one thing when I'm in, like, changing the mix on chat versus audio or something.
Right.
Let me hit the Xbox button like I do with my iPhone. I don't like scroll through looking for apps. I just drag down, type YouTube or type Gmail or whatever, automatically pops up. Give me that for the Xbox.
Yes.
You know?
All right. Let's move on here quickly. We're running out of time in a hurry already.
Oops.
As it always happens on when I think it's going to be a short, painless show, it turns into some epic conversation, which is great. The Xbox division, some excellent news, topping $10 billion in revenue in a year for the first time for the fiscal year that ended for them on June 30th. $10 billion in revenue in its games and services division for the first time. Microsoft reporting a 39% increase in revenue in that division, which is credited in large part to Xbox Live, to Game Pass, and Mixer as well. Quote from CEO Satya Nadella, in gaming, we are pursuing our expansive opportunity for the way, from the way games are created and distributed to how they are played and viewed, surpassing $10 billion in revenue this year for the first time. We are, this was on an investor call, he said this. We are investing aggressively in content, community, and cloud services across every endpoint to expand usage and deepen engagement with gamers. The combination of Xbox Live, Game Pass subscriptions, and Mixer are driving record levels of growth and engagement. So, yeah, you know, I'm sure Microsoft's going to be selling that Xbox division like the internet thought they were going to do. Yep. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that's going to happen any day now.
Yep. Here's what that says to me. It says to me that you can make all the comparison charts you want online, PlayStation versus Xbox, but Xbox is doing more and doing it better with their platform for their audience than Sony is, and Sony needs to catch up. They have Mixer integration. They're doing a lot of stuff there with the games that are on their platform.
Yeah.
They have the fantastic Game Pass service, and they're just rocking it right now. And they're only going to continue to grow with all this studio acquisition.
It's really cool to see Mixer integration too. It's going back to playing Vermintide, there is an entire vertical where it's like play with your Mixer following.
Yeah.
And that blows my mind. That is so cool. And we had a meeting with Mixer months ago where they were like, talking about ideas for, you know, letting users being able to change settings in your room and setting up like a sort of a smart streaming service. Such a cool integration. And they're knocking it out of the park with their acquisitions.
After this, I'm actually streaming No Man's Sky, so you'll have to watch the VOD, but we're actually going to be utilizing the Mixer integration with that stream today to sort of test it out. You'll have to see how it went.
Nice. Are they going to change the colors in the room behind you?
No, I didn't set that up.
Okay.
But I need to get those lights.
I think I'm just most excited to see how Game Pass continues to evolve because it's just such a great service. My little sister recently got an Xbox finally, and so I was just like, the first thing you need to buy.
You said that like such a big sister, finally.
I know. I just like, come on, guys, just get every console like me. It's fine.
Yeah.
No, it's kind of impractical, but you know, I understand she's a college student, but yeah, this is the first thing. I was just like, it's like the best value for like just getting into the system, like finally getting back to it, and it's just great.
Well, the fact that the CEO of Microsoft is calling out Game Pass specifically bodes well for them continuing to invest in it and grow in it. So that's, we should continue to see some really good stuff. And it's a snowball effect, right? Mm-hmm. Typically with these things is Microsoft's already committed to all the first party games being day and date on this service. So that's that plus the continued success of it. And you've got Satya Nadella talking about it. It's only going to encourage more third parties to get on board with it too. And it'll all snowball to the point where, I mean, I would not at all be surprised if in 5 years, if we're all still sitting here doing this podcast, that's all it is if like we may be at the point where that's just how we play our games is through Game Pass.
Wow. $10 a month for every game ever, like in 5 years, $10 a month for every game that comes out.
I mean, they'll have raised the price by then.
Sure.
Inflation and whatnot.
And $12.99.
I know the big argument out there is like, but what about the games? And I understand that for sure.
Like preservation and.
Yeah. But I think Microsoft is very clearly building the infrastructure for next gen, you know, the acquisition of those five new studios.
Yeah.
So they have the foundation and the support beams for something that in 2 years, in 3 years, is going to be amazing.
They're playing the long game.
Yeah. I think they know that this generation is already away from them. So, you know, 2020 comes around.
Looking forward.
I wrote an E3 editorial about that.
Yeah.
Go read it. It's actually very, very good.
Mm-hmm.
I shouldn't have said actually. Ryan's stuff is usually
surprisingly
very good.
It was competent.
Oh, yeah.
Man, hold on. Let me take my foot out of my mouth.
When's your performance review?
February. Don't worry, I'll win you over by then. No, we had a conversation literally like after watching the showcase, walking down the streets of LA during E3 and having this conversation. Mm-hmm. And it's so awesome to see that sort of solidified into this op-ed. It's very, very good.
Absolutely.
But next gen, man.
All right. Let's go back to current gen now. We've got to quickly get through these last few topics before Destin has to go cram some food in his face and play No Man's Sky, which is the big Xbox release this week.
Mm-hmm.
QuakeCon details. Just want to pass these along to you. We'll be covering QuakeCon in full. Tom Marks is going to be going for IGN. He'll be our man on the ground there, and then we'll all be covering it from here as well. The keynote, which is notable, used to be – I used to love those John Carmack keynotes. He's obviously not at id anymore. No disrespect to anybody still at id, but Carmack stuff was always super fun to listen to in one way or another. But what is going to be very exciting to see in the keynote is the gameplay reveal of Doom Eternal. I'll call it Doom 2. Thank you very much.
Hell on Earth.
Yes. That's what I said. That's why I yelled it in the war room, and then the name turned out to be Doom Eternal. I was like, oh, okay. Well, we
Doom 2, colon,
we
should have
gone. We should have just gone with the Hell on Earth thing. But anyway, August 10th, 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern time. That is when that keynote is happening. That is when we will all see the gameplay reveal of Doom Eternal together.
It'll be live
stream. It's going to be we're trying to see about carrying that on IGN for you. I'll keep you updated on that. Id Software's Marty Stratton and Hugo Martin will be involved there. Also, look for more on Rage 2, The Elder Scrolls Online, and Quake Champions, as well as a panel of fan Q&A with Todd Howard on Fallout 76. So we will have a lot of coverage for you coming out of QuakeCon, which is in less than three weeks from now.
Mm-hmm. I cannot wait for that beta.
Yes, thank you, Destin. You have to wait a little few more months, though.
Oh.
Yeah. The Fallout 76 beta, which, of course, cheekily acronymed as Break It Early Test Application, will begin in October. No specific date yet, Destin.
Yeah.
But they'll be selecting people who have pre-ordered the game from a participating retailer. And they will start small and grow over time as we prepare for launch, according to a community administrator from Bethesda, which probably means kind of a lottery sort of deal at first, but then eventually, as all of these things do, be it for marketing reasons and or, I'm not going to discount, it can be both, marketing reasons and or actual like stress test kind of scenarios, eventually it'll just turn into a big come one, come all event. But October seems a little late for it to be like a real beta, doesn't it? I mean, I'm not a developer. I'm not trying to, but it's, you know, the game's effectively done at that point. So this might be more of a stress test, but that's okay. Yeah. You want to stress test it before it actually goes up for sale in November.
So Destiny did like the alpha and then they did the beta, right? So alpha was like select friends and family sort of thing. We were in there and a few other people and, it'll probably be sort of like that. Smaller group, slowly expand it, and then stress out the server. But we're going to get to play that game.
Yes.
Like ahead of time.
Yeah, which we didn't for Fallout 4 ahead of release. No, they didn't do any hands-on
events.
No
online, though, right? So.
Yeah, there was certainly no public.
Did they have times to do hands-on? It was basically out like so quick after they announced it.
Well, it was pretty much the same thing here.
Yeah.
You know, they announced it just prior to E3, just as they did with Fallout 4.
I love this.
Sort of a trend for Bethesda these days.
Seems like
a very good trend.
I guess actually flies in the face of like Elder Scrolls 6. By the way, here's a logo.
It's like, oh yeah, it's happening.
We'll see you in 6 years.
There you go. Yeah. And all our next gen stuff too. Or just mention
Starfield.
Starfield. I always want to say Starfire.
I say all of it. I'm kind of just like lumping Elder Scrolls into that just because I don't. It's going to be next gen.
Yeah, I think it'll be cross generational at best.
Sure.
If not next gen.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, so stay tuned there. And then finally, this had come up on the podcast. It was part of our E3 predictions as we're really running out of time. But just quickly, don't expect Halo to get a Battle Royale mode anytime soon. If you were hoping for that, sorry. If you were wanting Halo to just stick to doing its good Halo things and not jumping on board with the trends, this will make you happy. 343's Jeff Easterling and James Bacicci were asked I probably slaughtered his last name.
I was just thinking. I'm glad I don't have to pronounce
it. It's one of the two.
Bacicci?
No, that's not that. I don't think. James, you got to call in or write in. Let me know how badly I did there. Anyway, they were asked on the 343 Mixer social stream recently whether there would be a Battle Royale mode in Halo Infinite, and Jeff Easterling said, I'll tell you right now, the only BR we're really interested in is Battle Rifle.
That is a great
good
quote.
Stuff.
Yes. It's an excellent quote. Love you, James.
Feels like it was really off the cuff, too, which makes me love it more.
No, that's the only BR I'm interested in as well.
Whenever people say BR, I'm like, oh, Battle Rifle. Like,
right?
No, Battle Royale.
Halo had it first.
Oh. Yeah.
Dang it.
Check out the 343 guys do the social stream every Wednesday afternoon. So check that out. Sometimes it's good fun.
All right, quickly, I'm going to go to Miranda Sanchez. What is out this week? We've talked up No Man's Sky a little bit. I'm going to be curious to see how the Xbox community responds to that game, particularly after all these updates.
Yeah, so that's going to be out on July 24th and bringing, of course, a ton of features, including multiplayer. That's a big deal.
Yes.
Also on the 24th, we have quite a few other games. Aces of the Luftwaffe.
Luftwaffe.
Yeah.
Waffe?
Yeah, that's a German word.
Interesting. W's or V's.
Get pair in here.
I'm very bad at that.
Luftwaffe.
So Aces of the Luftwaffe Squadron, which is a bombastic air battles and boss fights.
Yeah, World War II planes.
The bullet hell kind of thing?
Or? Yeah, you can play co-op. Local battles.
Sweet.
It's pretty cool. Then we have Bud Spencer and Terrace Hill Slaps and Beans.
What?
I'm going to put this up here.
That sounds like a game about weed. Yeah. Dan Parkhurst can't even handle it.
Yeah, I can't even handle it.
I can hear him laughing through a wall. That's,
again, that is July 24th, Bud Spencer and Terrace Hill Slaps and Beans. It's a scrolling beat-em-up. Has platform elements and mini-games.
Or like bean-em-up.
Hey.
And then, you'll interpret the characters of Bud Spencer and Terrace Hill. Terrence Hill. I don't know who.
Oh, the Bean wasn't in the. I thought
next
the word
game.
Bean
was
in. No, it is. It so is. It's Bud Spencer and Terrace Hill Slaps and Beans.
Okay.
So it's a very long name.
Oh, my. Okay.
So these people.
That's the actual
slaps
name.
And Beans. Okay. Yes. Anyway, look that up after. Then we also have The Council, Episode 3, Ripples. So that's the third episode of The Council. Mega Man X Legacy Collection 1 and 2.
That's part 1 only. Just get part 1.
Thank you.
Okay,
and so it's Mega Man X3 for the SNES, not the PlayStation.
Ooh.
A lot of people ask that.
It's also July 24th. Then we have Train Sim World, also on July 24th, immersive first-person simulator that uses real-world data to bring the life to perform.
You
I've got this.
Good?
Yes. To bring to life the performance, sounds, and power of real trains. So real world.
So there may or may not on this, but like in Europe in particular, these games are enormously successful.
There is a franchise called Euro Truck Simulator for this exact reason.
So I haven't ever heard of Train Sim World, but I've heard of Euro Truck Simulator a lot. And of course, Farming Simulator and all those other simulation games.
Farming Simulator.
They're fun.
There may or may not be a segment on Beyond about that game.
Yeah, so I'm kind of curious about the real world data that it actually uses. But anyway, that's also July 24th. And then finally, moving on to July 25th, you can get Candle, The Power of the Flame. It's an adventure game with puzzles. Then you have Remothered, Tormented Fathers on July 25th. And then...
still a terrible name.
Also, yeah, I'm not a fan. July 25th, also, we have Super Blackjack Battle 2 Turbo Edition, The Card Warriors. You have a roster of 12 very different characters, all competing to become the greatest blackjack player of all time. And then July 26th, you have The Banner Saga 3.
Yeah, another
good old Viking RPG.
Yeah, it's a popular series as well.
Yeah.
All right. How about Games with Gold, Brandon?
Games with Gold for July are, let's do this in one take. Here we go. Assault Android Cactus, July 1st to July 31st, which is a cool little twin stick shooter that I played for a little bit. You should check it out. It's free. Death Squared. I have no idea what that game is, but you can get it from July 16th to August 15th. Virtual Fighter 5.
It's over.
Final Showdown is no longer a thing. You missed your chance. And lastly, Tom Clancy's... God, we were so close. Tom Clancy's Splinter Cell Conviction, July 16th to July 31st.
One of those days.
On 360 and Xbox One.
Something in the air.
I think it's just recording in the morning.
Maybe something in the coffee.
We're still drinking our coffee.
Yeah. True.
We just finished.
We moved Unlock a day earlier and an hour earlier. Thanks, Dan.
Yeah.
I don't know what camera you are, but I want to make eye contact with you.
Something.
Let's do trivia real quick. Tony in the UK, his gamer tag, if you'd like to friend him, is Little Tad X. Curious about the story.
Oh, I was really hoping his gamer tag was Tony in the UK. That is such an awesome tag.
Aww.
Tony in the UK, you're on the air.
Little Tad X, good too.
With Ninja Theory joining Microsoft, he has a question about them. They first made a game on the original Xbox called Kung Fu Chaos, but they weren't called Ninja Theory back then. What was the studio called? I confess, I did not know this one. I would not be getting a point here. Was the studio Just Add Monsters, Smilebit, Pop Top, or Games for You? Does anybody know this? Again, I did not.
No.
Nope.
So.
Destin, any thoughts?
No, but I can just give my guess.
Do it.
Smilebit B.
Okay.
Just Add Monsters, A Final Answer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Miranda.
I like that one. I'm still trying to get this wrong, so I'm just going to go C, pop, pop.
I love that you're...
She's serious.
I want to keep the one ahead.
She's shooting for the moon in hearts. So
I would like to get more than 1 point.
All right. So, Miranda, what did you go with?
C.
Okay. So you went with pop, top.
B-A-C.
All right. Well, let's see if Brandon can run Alana down, because he's correct.
No!
Just Add Monsters.
I had a feeling that it could be that one, just because it sounds like a...
I picked it because it seemed irreverent. And
Yeah.
Excellent work, Brandon. And
not really.
You,
it was a guess. But
thank you, Tony in the UK. If you'd like to contribute an Xbox trivia question for me to try and stump the panel with, please send it in. You can email me, unlocked@ign.com. Please include 4 multiple choice answers. Note the correct one in your email, and we'll play again next week. And it is time for us to run. My tummy's growling. Got to get some lunch going.
Mm-hmm.
And also a giant pile of work.
Oh my
busy
God,
day today.
So, much work.
So we'll get to that. I'm Ryan McCaffrey. You can find me on Twitter at @DMC_Ryan. I want to quickly plug IGN Unfiltered, the July episode going up here near the end of the month. It is my guest is Sissy Jones, who's just a phenomenal voice actress. You know her primarily, most prominently, as Delilah in Firewatch, and a BAFTA award-winning performance. And she's also voicing Fury in Darksiders 3, which we've been covering all month long as part of IGN First. So please do check that out. I really very proud of the Unfiltered series. Destin?
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at Destin Legary. You can also watch my streams, twitch.tv/TheDestinChannel, mixer.com/TheDestinChannel, seeing this is an Xbox show. I figured I would point that out. I actually need a bunch of followers on there. So hit me up and you can watch on that platform.
Brandon?
I'm Brandon Tyrell. That is also my Twitter handle, Brandon at Brandon Tyrell. Lots of Xbox stuff going up. Check out the Halo Arcade stuff from this week. And check out my new puppy on Twitter because she's very cute.
Yes. Aww. Now you're tweeting again. See, we got you back on.
I tweeted once. I'll tweet again next week.
Once. Fair enough. Miranda Sanchez, take us home.
Yes, you can follow me at Havoc Grows, and that's Havoc with a K, and you'll find me starting out less. Next week, I don't think I'll be on the show because this week I am prepping for a really cool trip to go see a thing that we're going to work on. So
I forgot about that until you just said it.
Yep.
Yeah, that's the that's what I'm working on. You'll see.
Curious.
Ooh.
What?
Oh, right. I'm being whispered. Literally. remember, you can find, if you want to get the show early now, that's our gift to you. Watch it on IGN.com. Actually, specifically the show page, unlocked.ign.com, on Tuesdays at starting at 3 p.m. It's not live. You can pick it up. So anytime starting at Tuesday at 3 p.m. And then on Wednesday afternoons, it'll get published out to its other usual places like YouTube and podcast feeds. I think we did it.
Yeah.
We did it. This was episode 354. We'll see you guys next week.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it. Or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.